Accession number 8837, roll number 1.
Major Winter, reel 1. Where were you born, Major Winter?
I was born in Luton.
Which year was that?
1919.
What did your father do for a living?
He did many things. He thoroughly enjoyed himself as a short service officer after the war in India. And then he went to Canada. And on return from Canada, at one time he owned a pub. He's reasonably well off, so he didn't really worry him too much what he did. There were long gaps between starting each new venture. It was only when he got bored that he thought he'd do something else.
Where did you have your education?
I was educated at one of the oldest schools in England, St. Albans, and the Royal Military College at Camberley.
Why did you decide to go in for an army career?
I dearly wanted to become a naval surgeon. But both my form master and my headmaster disabused me of any possibility of me passing any medical qualifications. So I decided to go into the army instead. I had, as I say, my father thoroughly enjoyed it, so did his brother, and everybody assured me it was a jolly good career, and it was the next best thing to the Navy.
Did you ever have cause to regret it?
No. Never.
What about your course at Sandhurst? Did you find it fitted you for what was to come later, or did you find it irrelevant?
It was the greatest value of all. It taught an outline of general knowledge, a smattering of science, a smattering of engineering, a certain amount of military history, and above all, it was character breeding.
In what way?
It taught you to be a leader. And in my case, and as so many other, and all the others who were there at that time, of course, so shortly after leaving, 6 weeks to be precise, we were at war. And at least we'd been taught to lead, to take responsibility, and to enjoy ourselves.
When Chamberlain made his famous declaration that we were at war with Germany in September 1939, what was your reaction to that and the people around about you?
Well, the people round about me at the time, you see, were in the battalion, and it, as far as we were concerned, it had been inevitable for really the last year. No one was surprised.
Did people welcome the declaration of war, or was there any
opposition? No, they didn't welcome it. But one might say they were resigned to it. They'd seen this coming.
Did you come across anybody who was enthusiastic for the war declaration?
Difficult to remember at this stage, but I don't... No one stands out as being desperately overexcited about it. I think resignation and being overtaken by the inevitable was more the feeling.
So, did you not see any public manifestations of enthusiasm on the streets?
No, I didn't personally. Not enthusiasm, not that word enthusiasm. There was considerable interest and fervour, but not enthusiasm. There were plenty of people who went round and said, well, serve them right, they've had it coming to them, but not enthusiasm.
Did you come across anybody who was opposed to the war declaration?
No. Not in the circle that I was in. You must remember, I had only joined the regiment some 4 or 5 weeks before the declaration of war. Therefore, I hadn't, as it were, got to know many people in the station, and it was only really my immediate friends in the battalion.
What did you and those round about you think about Britain's chances against Germany?
There wasn't any doubt in our minds at that moment. At that moment, at the end of August, the beginning of September, there was no doubt in our minds. There were the inevitable chaps who said over before Christmas, but then they always say that. There was no doubt. There was a mixture. There were the chaps who said over before Christmas. There were the others who said, well, the last one took 4 years, so this will probably take 4 years. But there was no doubt about the outcome at that moment. Later, after Dunkirk, perhaps people might have revised their opinions, but in 1939 there was no doubt.
In military terms, were people thinking that it would be a repeat performance of the First World War, or were they thinking in terms of a different type of strategy? Or didn't they think about it at all?
I think opinions were mixed. There were those who had been in the last war, who were applying the same rules and events. There were the younger ones who hadn't been in the last war, who thought that the German Blitzkrieg method would have probably precedence over the post-war static, the pre-war static battles. But there was a certain amount of faith in the Maginot Line.
Why had you joined that particular regiment, the Yorks and Lancs?
It was my second choice. My first choice was the Worcesters, in which my uncle had been adjutant and later company commander. But there was no room. And my second choice, the York and Lancaster regiment, because two other chaps from my school had joined a couple of years and 6 months before. So I put that down, and there happened to be a vacancy, for which I'm eternally grateful. I never regretted it. I couldn't have joined a nicer, better, more happy regiment.
Did the long period of relative military inactivity in the winter of 39-40 take you by surprise, or had you anticipated that?
I personally was surprised at my tender age. I couldn't understand why the Germans appeared to be doing nothing. I understood that we were waiting for them to invade Holland and Belgium, but I couldn't imagine why the Germans weren't doing anything at all, especially as it was a hard winter, and the mud and squalor of the 1418 war didn't apply at that time. I mean, it was a hard, in fact, it was extremely hard and very bad winter. Ice, snow, and there was no earthly reason why a modern German army shouldn't have advanced wherever it wanted. However, it didn't.
Was there any feeling that Britain and France should take the offensive?
I can't remember it. There might have been. See, I was in a slightly different position to normal. I wasn't serving with a battalion at that time. I was with an animal transit camp just outside Marseille. And the staff there were perhaps not applying themselves and hadn't the time to apply themselves to military prognostications that would have taken place in a unit in the front line.
Can you tell me about this animal transit camp and what its function was?
Well, myself and two other subalterns, each with a platoon of their regiment, the Orkney Lancaster Seaforths and Green Heart and I forget the third one. Seaforth certainly, Seaforth Highlanders and York and Lancaster, and there was a third one. Were sent down to a Chateau Renard, about some 10 to 15 miles. Say 10 miles east of Marseille, where we prepared a transit camp to receive the 1st Cavalry Division. It was a bit of luck for me because it was the last time that a cavalry division has ever performed. And the cavalry division consisted of the mounted units of the Household Brigade, the Yeomanry and Dragoon regiments of the Territorial Army, Royal Horse Artillery, and the mounted sections of RASC and ancillary troops. And all these came through France by rail, were placed in our transit camp pending the arrival of the horse transport ships from the Middle East, which brought the mules, the mule trains, the animal transport companies from India to combat the Flanders mud that was expected in Europe. As I say, because it was a particularly hard winter, they were completely out of their depth because all the animals slipped and fell down on the ice and the snow, and there wasn't the mud that they were going to operate in so much better than the transport. Anyway, they all came in, these troop transports. We received the mules, the animal transport companies, and dispatched the 1st Cavalry Division to the Middle East, where I don't believe it ever went into action, certainly not as a division. I think one or two small elements might have seen action, but nothing else. But it was a wonderful sight, and one that no one will ever see again.
What were your own personal duties there?
The infantry subalterns in there were the the working parties, the fatigue parties. We erected the tents, made out the picket lines for the animals, humped the stores, provided the guides to meet them at the ports and railway stations and guide them to and from the camp. Now, all the odd job duties. There were cavalry officers. There was a cavalry officer as commandant and a cavalry officer as adjutant. And of course there were cavalry warrant officers there. We knew nothing of the complications of cavalry at all. We were merely the fatigue men. We were about a couple of months.
Which months would those have been?
About November, December, January. Certainly December, the whole of December and whole of January. 3 months, I suppose. End of November, the whole of December, January, and towards the end of February I left. We stayed there... excuse me. We stayed there for about a month after the last of the horses had been shipped out, expecting another load in, but it never transpired, and then they sent us back to the battalions.
Did it seem strange that forces should be going out to the Middle East at that time, when there was a possibility of a major threat in Europe?
No. No. The Middle East has always been a tricky and doubtful place. The Indian Army, as I knew from the Royal Military College, which was taking on extra officers for the Indian Army, the Indian Army was prepared to expand, and we were not at all surprised.
Now, at this time, had you ever anticipated that there might be a campaign in Norway?
At that moment, no. Norway didn't. All our thoughts were pointing east across Europe, possibly slightly south, but not north at all.
When did...
By our, I mean myself and my contemporaries, of course.
When did the possibility of conflict in Norway first begin to materialize as far as you personally were concerned?
A matter of days before we were moved. And until the... 49th Division, the Territorial Division, which had our Hallamshire Battalion in, moved to Norway. We hadn't really paid a great deal of attention to it. Perhaps I should say I rather than we. We gives a false impression. I can't speak for the rest of the battalion. But me, as a scatterbrained second lieutenant in those days, had not... It was only the last few days that Norway occurred to me.
How did it come about that you went there?
I was called to an O group late one night in company headquarters, told to pack up. We were leaving France, leaving our transport behind. That came as a blow. Because up to that moment, our role, we were at this moment stationed on the French-Belgian border, about 5 or 6 miles south-east of Armentier. And on the invasion of Holland or Belgium by the Germans, our plan was to leap into every available vehicle, both military and impressed, motor flat out to the other side of to the Belgian or Dutch border, and there block the German advance. So it came as a disappointment to discover that we weren't going to take any transport with us. So we spent the rest of the night sleeping on the floor of the company office, and the following morning we entrained for, I think it was Boulogne, one of the Channel ports, and sailed for Dover.
Did you know where you were going?
Yes. Well, it was, yes. We knew where we were going.
And who exactly was moving? Which units?
15 Brigade, which was the 1st Battalion of the Green Hards, the 1st Battalion of the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry, and the 1st Battalion of the York and Lancaster Regiment.
Where did you move to once you reached Britain?
We disembarked at Dover and went by train overnight to Dunfermline, where we found a tented camp waiting for us on some high ground overlooking the Firth of Forth.
What were conditions like in the tented camp?
Normal tented camp. I mean, it was just tents, no furniture, that sort of thing. But perfectly normal as one would expect. We were told the plan, and we drew stores, extra ammunition, maps, quite horrifying maps to me then as a second lieutenant, small scale, about quarter inch to a mile. My impression was just black and white. Roads, railways, rivers, contours, symbols, were black ink on a white background. And as the terrain appeared to be remarkably precipitous, of course the contours were close together, the valleys were narrow, so the rivers and the roads blended nicely with the contours, and to a second lieutenant who was only just mastering the art with a decent one-inch map in full colour and hashering, these were quite horrific.
Which areas of Norway did these maps cover?
These were the area of our objective. The plan was that we should the brigade should capture Trondheim. My platoon was given the task of an assault landing to capture an outpost which had guns on the outskirts of Trondheim. And it was to be a mad dash in, seize the post to cover the advance of the rest of the brigade. And we practiced as we could on this bleak Scottish hilltop.
What did the practice consist of?
The normal procedure of making your plan, detailing your sections as to who would lead the assault, who would give covering fire. The only trouble with it, of course, is that it was all done in the air. There was nothing concrete we could show the soldier. We couldn't show him the objective. We couldn't show him what the country looked like or where he had to go. We read the map and said it's a pretty steep hill and it appears to have woods because there are extra black squiggles which I think are trees. So it wasn't a very happy task, but I think with a bit of whim and wigor and enthusiasm, we could have made a good shot at it.
How long did this practice take place?
I think we had a couple of days, no longer. And of course it wasn't the full time because we were drawing straws. We were issued with really splendid reversed hide sheepskin coats, similar to an Afghan pashteen, only sweeter smelling. They really were. They were ankle length, and they were lovely. In fact, they saved our lives in Norway.
What happened next?
We then embarked the battalion on the cruiser Sheffield, and two companies on three destroyers, Ivanhoe, Icarus, and Impulsive. I personally was on Impulsive. A very worthy ship, but second cousin to a whale. It only came up for air every 15 minutes. The rest of the time it appeared to be below the water. Not being a frightfully good sailor, I was glad to disembark at the other end.
Was there any sign of the Germans on the way across?
We ejected a couple of depth charges, but otherwise there was no sighting of the enemy. There obviously was something for the depth charges to go. And that impressed me by the explosion and the strength of the detonation, the whole ship trembling and vibrating.
What about aircraft? Were any? Did you see any?
I didn't see any, but then, as I say, I was below deck, not taking too great an interest in what was going on.
What about the strength of the unit? Were you up to strength when you went across to Norway?
Oh, yes. The battalion was fully up to strength at that moment. And my platoon and the company were full strength.
What equipment did you take?
The standard